Well, hi and welcome. This is Dave. I appreciate the responses that I've received. In fact, a response to the two questions that I received today really adumbrates what we're about to talk about today. Here are the two questions, and they summarize some earlier questions. What's the most successful formula for conversions and conversations with potential clients that I can use to write a winning go-to dialogue and maximize outcome? And secondly, tools and insight that will transform my approach when talking with potential clients, making me more confident and my information more powerful. So we're going to be talking about some aspects of that specifically today in terms of mastering mindset, because one of the principles is that people buy states of mind even more so than products and services. And that's going to be really important. So let me ask if there are any questions or comments or things that you'd like us to talk about before beginning the seminar. Comments, feedback, question, clarification, anything at all that would be helpful to talk about from what we've discussed before or what you see in the outline.
Hi, this is Keith Englehart in Dayton, Ohio.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Just wanted to share, I really enjoyed your recommendation on Words Change Your Brain. I'm kind of in the first couple of chapters, but awesome read so far.
Well, great. I'm glad you found it useful. I think that's a particularly useful book for coaches, and that's exactly what we do all day is engage in conversations, and we want to help someone facilitate changes of mind, brain, and behavior that last. And I think neuroscience and psychology research offers us some really important useful paradigms to use to apply to strategic coaching. So thanks. Any other comments or questions? Well, I'm going to move into the material then, and we'll save some time at the end for discussion. We're going to talk about mastery mindset development. So just as a preface, athletes need not be the only ones who get themselves in an optimum state before going on the court or field. Actors, performers, speakers do as well. Anyone who tells a story does. Getting in state is mental, emotional, and physical. So, to apply this now, how do you get a potential client you may not know or don't even see in a state of mind to consider your service or product? The next time you want someone to get on board with your idea or service, simply tell them a story where the outcome is doing what you have in mind as the best thing to do. If you don't have direct experience, quote from some authority in the area to add credibility. And at the same time, tell a story in simple, heartfelt language. Storytelling is the best way to plant ideas into someone's mind. We know now from the mind and brain sciences that storytelling is the most powerful way to activate our brains. When we're being told an effective story, and think about this from your experience, perhaps your last experience, it activates not only the language processing areas, but also other areas used in experiencing the events of the story. Someone talks about how delicious a peach is. The sensory cortex lights up. When it's about emotion, our right neocortex gets active. When the story characters grab objects, motor neurons activate. When the characters observe a scene, vision-related neurons fire. A story puts our whole brain to work. Stories affect us mentally as well as physically. Ann Crindle at the Dartmouth Brain Lab showed how viewers' brains resonated with the specific emotion enacted on the screen. When the central character, for example, was angry, the viewers' brains registered anger as well. When the scene was sad, the viewers' brains corresponded. Whenever we see a scene of disgust, the brain region, the anterior insula, fires. We sense the other person's intentions and imagine what an experience means in his or her mind. mind sight, our innate ability to see into each other's minds, relies on our mirror neurons sensing authenticity in another's experience and purpose. And what this means is that the teller's state of mind and intention is key to the listener's reception. So think about this. When you're talking about a product or a service, you're the teller. Your state of mind and intention is key to how the listener receives it. For example, if we sense the other person is phony or distracted, we automatically distance or tune out. When someone genuinely smiles and looks directly in our eyes, it enhances the inclination to relax and feel more trusting. And this can happen on the telephone as well. I do all of my mentor coaching by telephone, and my initial discussion, brief discussion with a potential client is by the telephone. I train my coaches in New Life Story Wellness Coaches Training, New Money Story Mentors, to learn to listen to the language and the way of constructing and the way of experiencing to get even more information by telephone than in some ways we can get face-to-face because we get distracted. So this means that getting in state needs to be before you face your audience or client or customer. Relax your body, control your breath, get solidly grounded to access the optimum state of mind for a particular task. The primary reason to get in state is to concentrate your energy in a full, undisturbed immersion in your engagement. Remember the law of authenticity. The most valuable gift you have is to offer yourself. A significant leadership competency is self-regulation and self-management, knowing your own skills and deploying them effectively. So let's look at a mastery mindset now. Remember, people like, respect, trust, and are influenced by those who have the ability to remain calm and thoughtful. This default setting to remain centered and grounded no matter what is an essential success paradigm. Like any state of mind, it's contagious. Midbrain to midbrain, amygdala to amygdala. Regulating your own state of mind in a sustained way is the most effective influence on someone else to do the same. So, let's talk about the difference between success and failure. The two most important determinants of success are these: beliefs and state management. Two most important determinants. Let's talk about beliefs first. Beliefs determine what we will or won't do. What we believe, the meaning that we feel certain will come from situations, determines how we behave and what we do. Social neuroscientists show us that we have to believe in what we're selling or we won't sell. Belief is a state of mind. Belief determines the meaning attached to any stimulus, and the meaning attached determines the behavior. The oak sleeps in the acorn. Success comes to those who become success conscious. Failure comes to those who indifferently allow themselves to become failure conscious. The bird waits in the egg. The only known method of voluntary conscious development of belief is repetition of affirmations to your unconscious. Now, you're doing that whether you are aware of it or not, whether you focus positively or not, you are repeating beliefs to your unconscious. And remember, you get what you focus on, not what you want. So let's talk some more about how to develop this specifically. Visions are the seedlings of reality. If you can't see significant wealth in your imagination, in your vision, you won't see it in your bank account. Systematic, repeated visualization rewires the brain. Affirmations are stories that support the visualizations to revise mind software. In your handout, it's a combined outline and workbook, you have a copy of the visualization chapter from my book, Outsmart Your Brain. Each of these is a state of mind: belief, hope, courage, tolerance, confidence. You're not ready for something until you believe you can acquire it. Belief is a state of mind that may be induced or created by affirmation or repeated instructions to the unconscious mind. Repetition of affirmations to your unconscious mind is a powerful method of voluntary development of belief. And look at that chapter, because it's a scientific way, based in psychology and neuroscience, to develop a vision, which results in a rewiring of the brain, and affirmations, which become the story that support the vision. In other words, the mind software revision. Any thought that is repeatedly passed on to the unconscious mind is fully accepted and acted on. This is as true for wealth accumulation as it is for other consistent repetitions, such as crime. Belief is the blueprint, the software of the unconscious mind. We come to believe what we repeat to ourselves, whether it's true or false. If a lie is repeated, it ultimately is experienced as a truth, and the teller ultimately can't tell the difference between a lie and the truth. Now, how does that work? The mechanism is that focus aligns the energy field of the brain, and repeated focus rewires the brain, so belief becomes an anatomical reality. Now, there are a couple of types of belief. One are global beliefs, like life is, or people are, or I am, you know, to fill in the blank. Each affect the way we look at and interpret things and their meanings. Another kind of belief are the rules that we have, the cause and effect. If this, then. If this, then that. So, questions, usually unspoken, that clients or customers or patients will have. Five questions that are most prominent and usually unspoken, but highly, highly available as a sensitivity for that person to read. One, do you have my best interest at heart? Two, what would this product or service mean to me? Does it fill wants and needs and avoid pain? Three, is it worth it to me? Four, what would other people say or think? And we're going to talk about how to address each of these. And five, do I really need it now? The short term is usually associated with more pain. So, meaning you don't want to give up your money. Most people need to think long term to be successful. What will be in my best interest? What will I look back a month, 6 months, a year from now and be glad I did? And here's a key. Selling is a transference of emotion. You must feel certain to make someone believe. The number one way you convince someone else is if you're convinced. You will transfer whatever state of mind you're in, doubt or confidence. Remember the Wharton School of Business survey. Thousands of professionals were surveyed. The one factor that determined whether someone signed on or rejected the services, confidently and clearly stating the recommendation and the fees. Number two, the other big difference between success and failure, state management. So here's an everyday application to recognize and understand emotional couplings. Regardless of how logical you think you are, your first register of a new stimulus is emotional. It's that way for everybody. Any new input goes directly to your amygdala. Then the hippocampus attaches meaning, and then it goes to the forebrain to process consciously and intellectually to make it make logical sense. Now, a footnote here. The hippocampus is the primary location of the unconscious. It's where meanings are attached. So think about it in this way. You make decisions several seconds before you're even consciously aware. And there's some fascinating research from neuroeconomics labs about how people make purchase decisions up to 10 seconds before they're even consciously aware that they do. Everything at the lower emotional brain and the midbrain is an unconscious process. So once we unconsciously make an emotional commitment to a yes or to a no decision, these lower brain structures then send the conscious mind on a mission to gather all the logical reasons to support that decision. We then cherry pick data to support our belief. Notice how it happens in the opposite way we usually think it does. Well, I'll consider all the reasonable possibilities and the logic and the sensibility of it, and then I'll make a decision. It happens exactly the opposite way. We find something logical and sensible for a decision that's already made emotionally to light on, even if it's not an accurate cause and effect, as long as it makes sense. This rationalization is called confirmation bias. In other words, we look for something to make it make sense to gather closure, to end any dissonance. Once we make a choice, we couple memory from past experiences with the best guesses of a likely future. Now, the part of the brain that anticipates pleasant outcomes, the nucleus accumbens, the pleasure center, activates a buy decision, because just the idea of about to buy something, about to spend money, creates a hit of dopamine, the pleasure chemical. A don't buy decision originates in a totally different area of the brain, the insula, an area involved in anticipating pain, because you're going to give up part of yourself, your money, for buying something. The anticipatory emotions both bias as well as drive decision making. So consider how this can work. Credit cards decouple the buying, activation of the pleasure center, and paying, activation of the pain center in the brain. The pleasure of the purchase is segmented from the pain of future payment. This segmentation renders repayment a future abstraction. And our optimism bias can even suggest that we'll have more money later. At the very least, tomorrow's another day. So that's why people buy 23% more on average when they spend a credit card than when they pay cash or a check. Now, one application, it's another application. It's hard to save because of the way our minds work and our brains are wired. It's hard to resist the immediate pleasure of buying. Making and spending money both activate the pleasure center in the brain and create a dopamine hit, the pleasure chemical. It's difficult to substitute a theory like a future need, long-term saving, retirement, for an immediate payoff of pleasure. So, three reasons people fail. Not enough compelling reasons. Think about this for your products or service. Not enough compelling reasons. Limiting belief systems. Inability to consistently manage state of mind. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. Think about a simple example. You're at home, have a great dinner, and you're having a glass of wine with your partner or a great friend, and there's a noise in the backyard. You probably don't even register it. If you do, it's incidental, and you continue in the flow of the conversation that you're having. Now, next evening, it's Wednesday, and you've just finished Criminal Minds, and you're home alone. Don't ask me how I know the day of the week on that. You're home alone, and you're in a different state. You hear the same noise in the backyard, and you're alert. And you're a little vigilant and concerned and kind of need to check it out. Same stimulus, the state of mind determines a very different meaning. So your state of mind determines the meaning you attach, and the meaning you attach determines your behavior. That's why in coaching, state always comes first, then strategy and story. So there are two primary ways to regulate state of mind. physiology, and focus. Physiology is how you use your body to change your body, your biochemistry, to change your state of mind. An example of some primary tools: relaxation, deep breathing, meditation. The other way to regulate state of mind that can be used in combination is focus. What and how you focus on. From quantum physics and the brain, you get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns your energy field. What you focus on, what you pay attention to, determines your state of mind. Your state of mind determines the meaning you attach. The meaning you attach determines your behavior. So your power is what you focus on. So the questions we ask determine what we focus on, or what our client, our potential customer, focuses on. Questions direct the focus, therefore determine the state we're in. A couple of questions we're always asking ourselves, even though we're not even conscious of it. What does this mean? What should I do? For example, if you have an habitual feeling you don't like, it can come from a repeated focus in questions. Why does this always happen to me? The presupposition is you're in a passive position, you're ineffective. Why am I overweight? The focus is on something negative, on overweight. The quality of your life comes down to the quality of the questions you ask daily. Change the questions. Ask a better question. Since we're always asking questions from the moment we wake up, although you may not be aware of them. So if you immediately begin when you wake up asking, what can go wrong today? You've already begun a scenario that establishes a negative state of mind. You know, another bad question: can I really do this? So ask a better question. In fact, I've done this with two or three clients who have had particularly horrible things happen in their businesses that they were in charge of, and they had a state of mind that had lingered for several months when I started working with both of them. And I recommended that they write down, sometime before they went to bed, three questions that would put them in an optimum state of mind, a powerful state of mind, and put those questions next to their bedside table. And as soon as they woke up, as soon as they turned on the bedside lamp, to take those questions and address them, to answer them. And what they found was that put them in a positive state of mind that lasted them several hours into the day, and most of the day in most instances, and created the state of mind. Because remember, when you're in a negative state of mind, you're going to look for things to validate that. That determines how you're going to perceive things. When you're in a positive state of mind, you're going to find and create ways to sustain that state. An example of a better question: what will I create today that will be more powerful than I ever dreamed of and have fun doing? What can I do today that is going to be phenomenal for my purpose in my business? Remember, your brain follows your focus, whether that's positive or negative. Ask questions that empower you, not negative questions, or not why questions that involve negative stuff, or even questions disguised as a positive one. Well, you know, how am I going to get over this overweight? It's still a negative focus. Here's an example of how you get what you focus on, not what you want. The great aerialist Carl Wallenda, the patriarch of the Flying Wallenders, had performed death-defying feats on the high wire for more than 50 years. Still, at the age of 71, Wallenda's capacity for focus on his intention was legendary. His concentration on success became a self-fulfilling prophecy for over five decades of triumph on the high wire. What you focus on grows. Wallenda's wife indicated that he had been anxious the day before taking the wire, a tightrope in San Juan, Puerto Rico. For the first time in all the years that she'd known him, he was concentrating before the show not on succeeding, but on avoiding the risk of falling. he personally supervised the attachment of the guy wires, which he had never done before. During the performance, he tragically fell to his death. You get what you focus on. So asking effective questions can determine your state of mind. This is your power of focus. Ask habitual questions that empower you. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to get us to use our own resources. Now, let's look at optimum performance state of mind. The difference between a professional and an amateur, between massive success or less, is the ability to manage your state, to achieve and sustain a peak performance state. Now, let's apply that to your business. Remember, selling is transferring emotion. What that means is your state of mind has emotional contagion. When you manage your state, it's important because your state induces the same state in others. You associate positive or negative emotion and state to your services or product. So does your prospect. If you're not in a peak state, like a down feeling or a lesser expectation, that's also going to be emotionally contagious. Authentic energy is contagious. When your story truly excites you and you let that excitement show, it will be infectious to the audience. Your authenticity of genuine enthusiasm and conviction will resonate with the audience. Now, there's a secret here. Think about the times you've been impressed with presentations and motivated to do something, and the times you've been turned off. Why does someone who begins at peak state with a client or customer sometimes come across as hyper or like a typical salesperson and turn the prospect off and create a response like an eye roll at an over-the-top, off-the-wall spiel that turns the listener off by the first few words? The answer, they don't begin where the client is. Remember, the first thing we do with a client is to empathically resonate, to become attuned to the experience, the state of mind of the client, and find a way to communicate that experience, to simply reflect it back. What this does is to co-create a common ground. You're on the same ground first. That's why state, and that's how state, comes first. Simply to resonate with the experience of a client creates a common ground. Then that client and you are together in that same place, ready to go forward. If, for example, the client talks about being overwhelmed by the number of things that he or she is doing right now, and begins to talk about that, a simple resonance with that to reflect that you get it. Now, I hear how overwhelming that can feel for you. That lets the client know that he or she has been effective in communicating to you, and you've created a common ground that can be calming. The client is then more ready to move ahead with you because there is a resonance together. Then the client will go someplace new with you to follow your lead. You co-create a state that is then a mutual journey, a process to arrive stepwise at the same place. Many years ago, when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I had a really succinct and powerful lesson about this from a very accomplished woman executive in analysis with me. I offered an interpretation to her that I thought was a particular insight. She paused. Finally, she rose up on one elbow, turned around on the analytic couch, looked directly at me, and said, "No, Kruger, first you have to be with me before I can go someplace new with you." That was a brilliant simple synopsis of the principle that we're talking about. We have to be with the client or the prospect first before that person will go someplace new with us. So, consider these questions for your reflection. How much money, how many clients have you lost because you haven't been in a peak state, in an optimum state, in the last 3 months, in the last 3 years? How much has it cost you emotionally, as in regret, pain, less energy, less money, of not being in a peak state in the last 3 months, in the last 3 years? In the next 10 years, what will it cost you if you don't change? In the next 10 years, what if you operate at peak state and enjoy the process? Selling is a transference of emotion. You associate your state to your product or service. People associate your state to your product or service. People buy a state. State change is activating. It stimulates the error detection mechanism, which causes people to pay particular attention. So I think there are four important principles here. These are in your outline, and I want to specifically talk slowly here because I think it's so important. State is what you're selling more than a product or service. Selling is influencing the client's focus, the value, the benefits, to avoid pain and to gain pleasure, the value of benefits. Questions control what we focus on and the state we're in. Self-reflection is a mindset to develop thoughtfulness, depth, and wisdom. It's a way we self-regulate, a way we self-monitor, a way we consider if what we're doing is working, if what we're doing is working with a particular client or a particular group or product or service. So let's apply that a little bit more to peak state. What we want to do is to match the optimum state of mind to the specific task. So, to anchor yourself for success, peak performance comes from being in a peak state. The quickest way to change your state is to change the way you're using your body to cue that state. Develop a power cue or gesture that immediately puts you in an optimum state. For example, the greeting that you heard when you signed on to this seminar and previous seminars, Lisa and the CTA greeting for teleconferences. She, before she recorded that greeting, she got in a peak state. She was smiling while she was delivering it, so that would set the tone for an optimum state for engagement for everything that people sign on for trainings, for teleconferences. Remember, your optimum state for some things, such as a presentation, may be to energize and generate optimism. For other things, like working with a client, it may be simply to get fully centered and grounded so that you have full access to all of your range of experience and that you can 100% be immersed in the client and the client story and tuning in to the experiences of the client and thereby use in an optimum way your intuition, your sensing of what's going on in the process and in the content. At times, it may be helpful to have a quick way to get centered, to move a mindset to one of confidence and peak performance. So here are some additional ways to regulate your state of mind for a specific task. One is to develop a mantra. And I would suggest, for a little bit more detail, look in my blog archives for the blog on mantra. And a mantra consists of three parts. A cue, which is something that you do to initiate the other two parts, the focus and the physiology. Let me give you a very simple example. Before I do a keynote, I did this weekend before last when I was one of the neuroscientists at the Brainathon with John Assaraf. Right before I did the presentation, I did, and this is the same thing I do before a keynote, I put my index finger and thumb together on both hands to form two little circles, and then put those together to form an infinity sign. That's my cue. My focus is to say a phrase, relaxed and powerful, and at the same time, I'm taking two deep breaths, breathing in relaxation, breathing out any tension. So in a matter of 5 or 6 seconds, I'm in an optimum state for exactly what I want to do. There's an example that we just don't have time for because I want to cover some other things, but there's a really vivid example of using a mantra in sports psychology in the blog. And I certainly use this and help the pro athletes and actors I work with to use it. And the coaches as well. Before I accept a call from every client, I do all my work by telephone. Before I accept a call, I will have a minute or two that I'm focusing on the client, that I do a mantra so that I am totally ready to be absolutely immersed in what's about to emerge. Now, some other ways to regulate your state of mind for a specific task. One is to create a motivating music playlist. I gave my wife an iPod with stimulating music to get her in state for her first racquetball tournament. She won her division, and I was just glad she was beating somebody besides me. But it also improves not only focus, but distraction, because it really focuses your attention. Recall an instance of optimum performance, including details of that time, as well as how you felt after your accomplishment. Set a specific goal for your performance. I will deliver a powerful and compelling talk to the women in the financial executive organization. And finally, don't judge or observe while you're doing it. Remain immersed in the flow to sustain your mindset. Even a nanosecond of a moving to an observer position can disrupt that flow. Now, let's return to the notion of confidence is a state of mind. We now know that confidence is a greater predictor and determinant of success than competence. Even. For example, in studies with business school graduates, men initiate salary increases 40% more than women do. And when both ask, women ask for 30% less than men. At Manchester Business School in England, Professor Marilyn Davidson said, "I've been doing this work for about 7 years, and every year there are massive differences between male and female responses. The male students expect to earn significantly more than the women. And when you look at what the students think they deserve to earn, the differences are huge." Now, we can never earn more in the outside world than we can earn in our own minds. If we earn 10% more or less than an income thermostat, in other words, when your income thermostat is set on a particular figure, and you earn 10% more or 10% less, you're going to adjust what you do automatically in behavior and pattern to reestablish the status quo, to remove the thermostat back to the set point. So we have to achieve it in our minds. We have to change the thermostat before we can achieve it in reality. One way to do that is to create a vision, because when you create a vision, engaging all your senses, and repeat that vision first thing in the morning, last thing in the evening, you're rewiring your brain. You're creating a success scenario that you just need to figure out and plan a way to back into. We always present in a manner consistent with our self-concept, just as we do in any other role that we play. A self-concept regulates every aspect of our lives. It's the software that drives the behavior. Confidence is a state of mind that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you do everything except close a sale or not make a specific professional recommendation to a client about your services, your self-concept in that area needs to be addressed. Failure experiences or non-experiences lead to lower self-confidence and become a self-fulfilling belief. The professional must always maintain the initiative. You've never heard other professionals like doctors or attorneys or financial professionals say something wishy-washy like, well, you think it would be helpful for us to work together. The professional makes a specific, confident recommendation. Don't let the guy with the broom decide how many elephants are in the parade. So, consider this. What's the best time to make a sale? Is it after a vacation and you're relaxed? Is it when you have debt or a dry spell and you're really motivated? No. The best time to make a sale is right after a sale. Confidence is a state of mind. Sustaining an optimum state is as important as changing a negative state. So the way you can do it right after a sale is get in the state of mind of having made a sale. Consider this. The major things that hold the client back from making a purchase: fear of making a mistake, concern of not getting value, worry about paying too much, question of not being able to use the product or service. The major thing that holds the salesperson back is only one thing: the fear of rejection that the client may say no. All successful sales are based on one factor, a relationship. People don't buy from people they don't like, and people can't sell to people they don't like. Enthusiasm accounts for more of sales closing ability than any other factor. The transfer of enthusiasm changes the state of the other person. Confidence begets enthusiasm. The key to developing an effective engagement is to know what your unique proposition is, what you do better than anyone else. You offer something that other products or services don't offer. What is it that is unique and special about your product or service? People won't buy your product because it's as good as everybody else's. They will buy it because it's unique in some way for them. Your key job is to identify that unique advantage that sets you above everyone else and build your presentation around that. Your opening remark determines whether the prospect will listen to you. It needs to be planned word for word. In the first 10 words, remember the Mark Wallman research, in the first 10 words, people decide whether they're going to listen to you or not. So don't begin with, well, here's how I would answer that. You've already used 7. You only got 3 left. Do you resonate with their need, their essential challenge? Remember the example from the announcement of this seminar series. The first bullet. Do you have significant expertise and credentials, but not enough sales? Focus on the key benefit that that person will enjoy, not what you've done, not what your experience, not how long you've been doing what you're doing, not your credentials. Hint at the result. Plant a seed of the benefit in your first question. If you ask a question, people are conditioned to respond to the question before they respond to anything else. Make sure your question is focused on the benefit that you bring to their problem. Now, let's look at a mastery model. Your body of work is the process of a creative mindset, a series of experiments that can be interesting, intellectually stimulating, like solving a problem, a puzzle. So, first, look for models. Look for someone who's doing business in an innovative and effective way to understand the key parts of their business model. Find someone who's doing what you want to do, having success at it, and learn from them, but do it in your way. It has to be your story. For example, a few years ago when I wanted to offer a mastermind group to the licensed specially certified coaches I train, I read books about different models, signed up for a teleseminar course, and was mentored by a leading expert and participated then in a mastermind group myself. Next, define the phases for your business. Here's an example of a definition. Define a specific target market. Identify, and that is for you to focus and get to know and listen to specific questions from specific people. Secondly, identify the unique pain, the problems or challenges of that target market. Because you want to make a case for whatever you want to do and aligning it with their challenges. Why this project? Who is the audience? How will you capture them? And the biggest question, what's your story? Create an initial offering of a service or product that solves that target market's problem. Test the offering with a finite number of ideal participants, maybe initially with a focus group. Then, debrief your test and determine how it could be replicated, how it could be improved. Develop the business plan from your lessons learned, and then identify an ultimate offering. Develop a following, your platform, such as your mailing list, blog, newsletter, LinkedIn, professional Facebook. Develop a product to sell to the market when your list grows. Test, debrief, continue building services and product. So, what's the next thing? Begin with right where you are right now. What's the next thing you want to add to your body of work? What do you want to create? Name it. Describe it. For example, is it a teleseminar? Who's it for? Describe your audience specifically. Why does it need to get done? Describe the roots of this project and how it fits into your body of work, your brand. Who will be affected by it? And what good thing will happen as a result of your completing it? How are you going to structure it? Define a model you're going to use. When does it need to be done? Set a deadline. So, focus on the basics, in other words. Give attention to every aspect of your products and services. Everything you do and produce needs to be totally professional. And this includes proofreading and spell checking, even your emails. Deconstruct everything, the specifics of what exactly leads to your success, the specifics of what works and what doesn't. If it works, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. The evidence that we truly understand a pattern of behavior is when we know how to reverse it. Think about that, but on your own time, okay? Establish boundaries and framework for your work. Schedule, telephone, personal, professional time. Don't get them all mixed up like you take a call whenever somebody decides to call you. Protect your energy, especially from people. Create a specific creative container for your work. Treat your physical space with reverence, including everything brought into it. Respect your tools as well as your time. Use the best tools you can afford. I learned that from my dad growing up on a farm and ranch. Learn fully how to use those tools, your computer, social and business media. Cultivate your voice. Everything needs to be your story told in your voice. Keep your focus on honoring your work. Listen to criticism as well as accolades, but ultimately take neither personally and stay focused on your own self-regulation. Develop intuition, unique expression, ideas, all from your internal point of reference, all under the umbrella of your brand development. And here's something to think about, too. Punch through the bag. Martial arts teachers emphasize to punch through the bag when they're practicing jabs and crosses. Rather than focusing on hitting the target, which makes your punch weak, it ends where the bag begins, set your target a foot behind the bag and aim to hit that. The same applies to your work, to how today's goal relates to tomorrow's goal and next year's goal, how your choice today affects those in the future and what happens after what happens next, your goal and your stretch goal. When imitated, rather than get upset, move on to innovate the next stage of your work. Mastery is to consistently and constantly grow and improve. It's the process, not the end game. You might want to protect your brand, maybe by trademark. And finally, think like a scientist. Keep an open mind about whether what you're doing works or not. Evaluate all feedback from an objective perspective. Obtain a full range of feedback from all sources. 360s are great for this. A scientist creates a working hypothesis, tests it, observes with curiosity, asks why, tweaks, retests, observes. And the final thing I want to talk about is the circle. Draw on your, take out a single piece of paper and draw a circle. Imagine your audience is a person you're trying to persuade. Now, draw a stick figure in that circle to represent the person you want to persuade. What this has done already is to divide the world into two parts. People who understand the world the way your audience does belong inside the circle next to the stick figure. People who don't understand what your audience does belong outside the circle. So, to communicate effectively with any audience, your first job is to get in the circle. The challenge with your audience is this. If your audience does not see you as belonging in that circle with them, they're not going to listen. They will not seriously consider adopting your point of view. You'll remain an outsider who does have no influence. Outside, no one will listen to you. Inside, your audience wants to know you're on the same emotional page they are. First, identify something that your audience is experiencing. Resonate with that experience. Articulate the challenge or the pain points that person, that audience is experiencing. This moves you into their circle. Listen carefully. Identify the kinds of emotions your audience feel. Then put yourself in their shoes and ask why they're feeling that way, their specific challenges. What this means, you have to resonate. You have to meet with your audience where you find them before they'll walk with you. Remember my analytic patient. No, Kruger, first you have to be with me before I can go someplace new with you. That's the summary of everything we're talking about. See what they see, feel what they feel, and then find some part of their emotional experience that you can genuinely, authentically resonate with. Ample evidence shows that changing a strongly held belief has little to do with facts or logic. The best method, whether you're changing your mind or someone else or leading a group, is emotional, persuasive storytelling. Stories are more powerful than data because they allow us to identify emotionally with ideas and people otherwise disregarded or seen as outsiders outside that circle. We tend to align with people who share our identity, even if the facts disagree. Once you're inside the circle, you don't have to agree with everything, but you're inside the circle. Once we care about a character in a book or a leader we care about, we'll find a way to fit them into our story, our identity. Now, there's a great description about how the circle technique works with a Wall Street Journal article about how Obama began winning presidential primaries, his first run. And people were puzzled about how he was charming voters in the heartland, the very place that he was projected not to appeal to people. Reporter Stephen Hayes followed Obama around and analyzed his circle strategy. And this is how Hayes put it. His rhetorical gimmick is simple. When he addresses a contentious issue, Mr. Obama almost always begins his answer with a respectful nod in the direction of the view he's rejecting. A line or two that suggests he understands or perhaps even sympathizes with the concerns of the conservative. In other words, he moves into the circle. Hayes cited an example in which Obama was asked about the Second Amendment. He began his answer by saying that, having taught constitutional law for 10 years, he believed that the Second Amendment granted individuals the right to carry guns, the conservative position, and that he respected the right of lawful gun owners to hunt and protect their families. So he was in the circle. Only then, after he was in the circle, did Obama go on to talk about how he thought there should be new laws to help trace firearms used in crimes. At the end of his answer, Obama employed one final circle move, kicking opponents out of the circle. He said, "The argument I have with the NRA is that they believe any constraint or regulation whatsoever is something that they have to beat back, and I don't think that's how most lawful firearm owners think." So Obama is left standing next to the lawful firearms owners, his audience, inside the circle, while the NRA has just been declared bereft of common sense outside the circle. Winning means not only getting inside, it means having a better inside position than your opponent, who will then be on the outside. The circle vision suggests that to bring your audience over to your side, your first move should be to go where your audience is. Connect with the audience, then you can walk back in the direction you came from. Then you move forward together. And remember this. From Macbeth, we learn that we are most vulnerable, not when we're beginning, not when we're destitute or needy, but after the biggest triumphs of our lives. For Macbeth, the moment the witches came was after the most massive successes he had ever experienced of winning two battles and enjoying immense popularity. Just look at Elvis, Marilyn, Janis, F. Scott, Kurt, Belushi, Philip Seymour. Some people need mentor coaches not to become successful, but to regulate their states of mind, to manage emotions, to sustain success. And a final point. Let's talk about Girl Scout cookies again, to see what else we can learn about sales, especially as it relates to a state of mind. Most Girl Scouts are taught to memorize a fairly complicated spiel, one that involves introducing themselves, talking in detail about the good work that the Scouts do, and finishing with how the money raised goes for great purposes. Now, this is a tough task even for a professional, but especially for a kid talking to an adult stranger, can be scary. It's less likely to lead to a positive experience. Now, there's an alternative that more than doubles the initial sales rate. It's how laws and sausages are made, and avoiding that. Simply the question, what's your favorite kind of Girl Scout cookie? Remember, questions focus our brains to determine a state of mind. In 10 words or less, all the nostalgic memories of cookies past are summoned. The cookie memory record holder is Proust, who took one bite of a Madeleine and tens of thousands of words later was still remembering nostalgically. In one simple question, the power of the transaction shifts with the Girl Scout going from requesting to supplying. It's a question that avoids a no, a question that starts a conversation, a question that opens the door to emotion. Those are the questions that create value and build careers. The experience from the buyer's point of view is an emotional connection to something that has been in his or her life since being a kid. And there's a reason they don't change flavors of those cookies, as well as a positive reaction with a young person learning to speak up. Selling a state of mind far outpaces only selling Thin Mint cookies. Now, again, my apologies. I noticed the time. I got a little too carried away with some of the stories I wanted to tell you. I should create and stick to a script. If there are questions that you have or comments or clarifications that you have, please send me an email. Those of you who listen to the recording, I hope you'll respond. And again, if any of you have not sent responses to those first two questions, we have our final seminar next week. So I hope you each have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I look forward to picking up with you next week right here. Thanks very, very much.